from bureaus worldwide. This is FSN.
Thank you very much. It's coming up for 2.5 minutes past 5 o'clock. And it's me, Richie Allen. Welcome to Tuesday's programme. Two brilliant guests lined up for you today. Do get in touch with the programme on Twitter. It's at BBG Richie.
It's the BBG, not the BBC.
You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, I'll be joined this hour by the writer, broadcaster, former MP, former health minister, a woman who won Celebrity Mastermind and took part in Strictly Come Dancing. Edwina Curry returns to the Richie Allen Radio Show to talk about lockdown, why she believes it's necessary. Don't miss that. Edwina Curry later this hour. And in the second hour, former BBC journalist Tony Gosling, these days the host of Bristol's The Politics Show. Tony joins us live from Bristol. Lot to talk about with both of my guests. And I've already recommended that you join in on Twitter, because when you tweet me, I'll read those tweets out as I see them. Lots to talk about before we get to the guests, though. Tuesday, January 26th, 2021. It's cold out there. It's cold. Do check out richieallen.co.uk. Recently revamped. Lots of interesting things to read on there. Now, on yesterday's programme, we spoke about the possibility that Britons would need to quarantine in a hotel at their own expense upon returning from summer holidays this year. All right? All right. We're not sure if that's the case yet. Government ministers are apparently still discussing this. Now, as I speak with you, Boris Johnson is in Downing Street briefing the press. He might say something on this, and I won't know because, well, I'm talking to you. But apparently they haven't decided yet whether it will be, whether the quarantine will be reserved for non-British nationals coming into the country, or whether it will be a blanket ban on, not a blanket ban, excuse me, a blanket quarantine on everybody coming back into the country, including British residents. There's some speculation that we'll find this out tomorrow, Wednesday. Alrighty. What will it feel like? Here's Rob Patterson, the CEO of Best Western Hotel Group, speaking to BBC Radio 5 Live today.
I turn up with a family, your staff check me in, presumably, and they're all fully protected. I go to my room, and then what? I stay there for 10 days?
What's going to happen? Yeah, that's right. So, as I said, we're doing this already with various cohorts of patients and customers at the moment in some of our hotels. So the way it works is it's a one-way system. There's an entrance point and then there's an exit point. So people are leaving and coming from different entrances and exits. And then on arrival, there isn't actually the check-in process is very different to normal. So you're not walking up to reception and checking in and filling out a form as such. It's a contactless check-in. And as you say, there's somebody in PPE escorts the customer to the room, and then the room is where they stay for the full duration of their isolation period. There's CCTV on each floor and things like that to ensure that it's maintained, safety is maintained. And then food delivery is done outside the room 3 times a day, nutritious meals placed outside the room, and the customer comes out and collects that. And same with linen. There's a big protocol around linen because the linen that's been in the room has to be bagged and sealed in a particular bag, placed outside the room. Fresh linen is placed outside for the customer to take and change their sheets, change their towels, etc. So it's an entirely contactless customer journey.
It sounds like prison to me if it goes ahead. 10 days in quarantine upon returning. This one is going to run. Leaving it for the moment, though, the Dutch government says that it will not lift a curfew there after a third night in a row of violent protests against increased COVID regulations in the Netherlands. Shops in Rotterdam and other cities were looted. And the finance minister there, Wopke Hoekstra, said it's scum doing this. More than 180 arrests have been made there. Now, Sky's Adam Parsons, the Europe correspondent for Sky, has been following this. Here he is.
There are two drivers to this. One is the genesis, is a protest against lockdown restrictions and specifically against a curfew. Now, the Dutch curfew runs from 9 o'clock at night to 4:30 in the morning, but it is symbolically quite inflammatory. It's the first curfew the nation has had since the Second World War. So while France and Belgium, where I am at the moment, have both had curfews over recent months, and frankly, the imposition has passed with relatively little protest, in the Netherlands, this is seen as something of an affront to liberal democracy. I think there's also disenchantment with the government's management of the virus. But layered on top of this is undoubtedly an element of simple, unbridled vandalism. So last night, there were protests that turned violent in a number of places, Amsterdam, Rotterdam, The Hague, but also towns across the Netherlands, where you saw predominantly young people coming out on the streets and simply basically having a fight with authorities, throwing rocks around, breaking into stores, pushing over cars, setting things on fire. The sort of disturbance that we have seen previously that has got nothing to do with coronavirus. Now, the police responded with tear gas, with water cannon, had fireworks thrown at them. I've seen images of people on the street having rocks thrown at them by these people. So do we call them rioters or do we call them protesters? I think that's a difficult one to call. Probably a bit of both. It's a familiar theme from, let's say, French industrial protests, where you do get on the one hand people backing a cause and then the other, the so-called black bloc of those who have simply turned up to cause mischief. Officials from the Prime Minister, Mark Rutte, down to locals have said that this is just about opportunistic vandalism. But certainly I think they will have to take on board this level of discontent about a curfew after what is the third night of significant protest.
The third night, yeah. The Dutch chief of police said the riots had nothing to do with the basic right to demonstrate, but that's obviously nonsense. It's got everything to do with the basic right to demonstrate. Again, that one is worth watching very closely. Back to COVID and lockdown. 31 metropolitan police officers have been fined and formal investigations have been opened into two of them after they all broke COVID guidelines by going to get their hair cut. Apparently it was some sort of charity initiative. Here's Sky News' Enda Brady.
So we understand the Metropolitan Police received this allegation earlier this month. It has now been investigated and they've put out some information in the past hour confirming that a group of 31 police officers all went for a haircut at Bethnal Green Police Station in London's East End on Sunday, January the 17th. Now, we understand that some money was donated to charity as a result of this activity. However, management at the Met have investigated. Those 31 officers will now be fined a fixed penalty notice of £200 each. And I understand the two officers who were involved in organising the haircut and getting a professional barber into the police station will now be investigated for misconduct. We've got a statement through from the local commanding officer, and this is Detective Chief Superintendent Marcus Barnett. We can take a look at that now. And in this statement, he says, "It is deeply disappointing and frustrating that my officers have fallen short of the expectation to uphold COVID-19 regulations." And he continues by saying, "Quite rightly, the public expect police to be role models in following the regulations. I hope this action proves the police are not immune to enforcement of the rules, and we are prepared as an organisation to take action if we see officers have behaved irresponsibly." And all of this, of course, coming just about a week after a group of 9 officers from the South East Basic Command Unit were seen having breakfast together inside a cafe in Greenwich, and all 9 of those officers also got a £200 fixed penalty notice.
£200 fixed penalty notice. Yes, 12 minutes past 5. Now, you may have seen this on the website. Do spend some time on richieallen.co.uk. I'll be uploading articles to the website regularly, and I did mention yesterday you will be seeing articles from others, from guest writers or guest authors, whatever you say, in the very near future. I've already uploaded, with his permission, some very interesting articles by Dr. Vernon Coleman. Something on there today you might find interesting. A head teacher at a school in Oldham. Now, Oldham is obviously relatively close to where I'm based in Salford. A head teacher sent a letter to all parents warning the parents, if you don't obey the lockdown rules, you won't be able to send your children to this school anymore. Now, this is U3 Community School in Oldham. The head teacher is a woman called Martine Buckley. She said she knew that families were mixing with other households because children had confided in her or had told her as such, right? She said staff at the primary school are putting their own safety at risk to teach the pupils, and staff needed to be confident that parents on the other end were following the guidelines. So she wrote in a letter, she wrote, "Our teachers and support staff are putting their own safety at risk to look after your children, and they should be confident that you are doing your bit to follow the lockdown rules. I'm afraid that I will have to withdraw the offer of a place in school to children whose parents are putting us in danger." Now, I wrote on richieallen.co.uk today, and I mean it. It's not been determined whether the children volunteered this information or if they were asked. You'd have to guess they were asked. I don't imagine children volunteering out of the blue. "Oh, Miss or Ms or Mrs or Mr, my daddy is going out," or "my neighbours are coming round." I would guess they're being asked, because in the letter she describes the pupils as being open and honest. And by using the term honest, I think she's implying that the children were asked to inform on their parents. That is a very, very sinister road to go down, in my opinion. And a number of you have been posting on social media that you were or are aghast at learning that teachers are writing to parents, telling parents to obey the guidelines because the kiddies are telling us that you're not doing it. That's on richieallen.co.uk today. And another article on the website today, which I find very interesting, is it's an article about the more and the increasingly bizarre symptoms that are being attributed to COVID-19. And it's a bit of a giggle, but it's also, again, kind of worrying. You know, from reading the tabloid newspapers here in the UK and elsewhere, that recently they announced that hiccups and COVID have been added to the list of things that could mean you either have coronavirus or you've gotten over it. And I wrote today about something. I know a number of you didn't believe it. You had to go looking for it. The French have listed hearing voices as a possible sign that you are afflicted with coronavirus, because a woman was seen wandering around in Strasbourg at the basement of her building, or in the basement of her building. She was naked and running around. And she said when she was confronted, when somebody called the police and she was taken to hospital for her well-being to see was she okay, she said that voices in her head told her to do it. And when she had a neurological scan, which turned up nothing, they gave her a COVID test, and the COVID test came up positive, and they determined, did the French in Strasbourg, that her running around naked, saying that she was listening to voices or hearing voices, was another potential COVID marker. And they've added stuttering. They've added stuttering to this. You know, if you've had COVID and you find yourself further down the line stuttering, they've said, well, it could be coronavirus. And the craziest one of all, and this was covered in the local newspapers, or the local newspaper in Bristol, this is given extensive coverage, and this is the blue ribbon winner, by the way, and this is absolutely insane. I can't find any other way of describing it. It's lunacy. An 11-year-old Bristol kid had swollen toes that were itchy. So the mum did, you know, the obvious thing. It might be athlete's foot. So she got the steroid creams. She got the anti-inflammatories out. The mum did it all, but nothing worked. So he went to see the nurse at his local surgery. First port of call was the local nurse. The nurse didn't know what was going on and referred him to the doctor. And of course, you don't get to see your doctor these days. You do a telephone consultation. Or if you're lucky, you might do a Zoom call. So mum answered the phone call to the doctor, told the doctor what was going on, and without pausing, the doctor said, "It's COVID toe." And this is true. It's COVID toe. "Your son's swollen and itchy toes that are bothering him must be COVID toe." The mum said, "Are you sure it's not a reaction to cream or to anything?" "No, it's COVID toe," said the doctor. And That evokes images of how it might be in the near future. Ringing up a doctor, because you don't get to see the doctor. Right, you ring him up or ring her up and then you get a phone call back. And the doctor says, what seems to be the trouble? And you say, but before you even start, you say, well, I've got this pain. And the doctor interjects with, it's COVID. It's COVID. It's COVID. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's 18 and a half minutes past five. Let's move swiftly on. The Duke and Duchess of Sussex, Harry and Meghan, have partnered with a firm in Los Angeles to rid the internet of hate speech. This is madness. Emma Webb of the Free Speech Union was on talk radio with Mike Graham speaking about this, but also speaking about the news that Facebook has launched its news service in the UK today, which you can find very easily on your own Facebook page. Emma Webb of the Free Speech Union in conversation with Mike Graham.
At the end of the day, he's having to side with these various organisations, which are inevitably politically driven. It's not about censorship of all nasty people. It's about censorship of nasty people on one side of the argument. You know, like they're all very much excitable about banning Donald Trump from Twitter, but they're not so keen on Antifa being banned. And when they hear about that, suddenly it's all terrible. I mean, I was reading a story today that Facebook have now signed up with a contract with a load of media publishers in this country in order to sort of try and escape being sanctioned by the government. But believe it or not, they've gone into bed with all sorts of news providers, including The Guardian, The Financial Times, and Sky News. You know, and you just go, well, you know where that's going, don't you?
Yeah, it feels as if following all of the stuff that happened with big tech and their anti-competitive behaviour, trying to prevent even the alternatives in the form of Parler from operating, that they sort of are chasing everybody off of their platforms that they don't agree with, and then denying them the possibility of accessing social media elsewhere at a time when everybody is locked inside. And for all of these large corporates, and now for a prince and his wife to be using their position to try to censor people that they disagree with on the basis of an ideology that is disputed and shouldn't just be accepted as if it's somehow politically neutral. I that goes beyond winding up normal people. I think that this is a serious crisis for free speech, and it poses a significant threat.
And yesterday we spoke about a new initiative launched by a woman whose name escapes me now, but I can find it fairly swiftly if I hurry myself up. But we heard about a new initiative, didn't we? We heard a woman speaking to talk radio who said, if I remember, that she was going to try and provide some legal protection for people who might lose their job because they're not woke enough. Let me just find that story because it really is interesting and really is important. Let me scroll on down. Let me scroll on down. The woman's name is Helen Pluckrose. That's right, Helen Pluckrose. And she set up an organisation called Counterweight, which will offer support to people in danger of losing their job for not having the right opinion. These are real things that need to happen in 2021. How crazy. How utterly crazy. But how real and how true. 21 minutes past 5 o'clock. The Prime Minister Boris Johnson is in Downing Street. He's giving a briefing at the moment with the NHS England Chief Executive Sir Simon Stevens. And alongside him is UK Chief Medical Officer Chris Whitty. And they're going through the usual rigmarole of giving out death figures and numbers and talking about lockdown and how long it'll go on. They haven't mentioned quarantining people coming back from their holidays, I don't think, as of yet. I'm trying to keep an eye on that as I'm speaking to you. Johnson began the briefing, apparently, by saying it's hard to compute the sorrow behind the UK death toll passing 100,000. They've claimed that more than 100,000 people have now died since the beginning of the so-called pandemic last year. That's 100,000 people who died within 28 days of a positive COVID test. Johnson has offered his condolences to everyone who has lost even a loved one. Keir Starmer, watching this, has been saying that the death toll is a national tragedy. I'll be speaking very shortly with Edwina Curry, former health minister, about that and more on Tuesday's Richie Allen radio show. At BBG Richie. It's at BBG Richie. William says, even my 6-year-old son Billy was laughing at COVID toe. He laughed and he said, what? Well, exactly. And somebody else tweeted that when that lady rang or had the telephone consultation with the doctor who declared that her son had COVID too, that would obviously be added to the statistics. Now, I know it's only one, but that's going down as a COVID case. I mean, how many more of those? Forget about the death numbers and how dubious the death numbers are when you take into consideration that somebody could have a COVID test, it might turn up positive, and 3 weeks later they might have a heart attack. And then that is listed as a COVID death. Let's leave that to one side. How many people are going to doctors or speaking to doctors on Zoom or on Skype or whatever and are saying, yeah, I've got this, or I've got a pain in my neck, or I've got a bit of hypertension, or my blood pressure, I'm just not feeling great. And it's listed as COVID because the doctor says that's COVID. Because the doctor says that's COVID. Is it, doctor? What do? Well, stay home. Take plenty of fluids. And if it gets really bad, go to accident and emergency. And it doesn't get really bad, but nobody cares. It's listed as COVID. 24 minutes past the hour. At BBG Richie on Twitter. Do interact with the website, please. RichieAllen.co.uk. You can sign up there. Your data is very, very, very safe. It is, by the way. We're not going to do anything with it. Sign up and interact with other people and leave comments on articles if you want. Post your own opinions there as well. Alan in Liverpool says, does anybody take either Harry or Meghan seriously on any subject? Why are their opinions more relevant than, say, anyone tweeting, BBG, or in general right now? Oh yeah, they're in the club and they're trying to play the game. Patricia says, Richie, my husband has a friend who had a stroke. He was admitted to the hospital. He then has another stroke there and died. The cause of death was listed as COVID. Seriously, says Patricia. And we've heard a lot of stories like that. Now, I'm not saying there are 100,000 stories like that, but there are a lot of stories like that, okay? At BBG Richie on Twitter. Let's move swiftly on while we have time. No, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a tune. When we come back, more chat. Tony Gosling, the Politics Show, Bristol, live in hour two. Edwina Curry before that in the first hour in a few minutes' time. And this is for Sean, who said, Richie, with everything that's happening to the high street, with everything that is happening to our towns, our city centres, do play this by Bruce Springsteen. Genuine request from Sean. It is pretty apt. Here it is. It's Death to My Hometown by Bruce Springsteen from the Wrecking Ball album of 2012. That is Bruce Springsteen and Death to My Hometown on the Richie Allen Radio Show. The time 28 minutes past 5 o'clock. Do tweet me. It's at BBG Richie. I can't at the moment retweet you, sadly, although that will be restored tomorrow. I'm reliably informed by Twitter. Yeah, the account has been suspended for a week. I can see what you're tweeting to me, but I can't interact with you. It's because about a week ago, I tweeted something in the Daily Mail that wasn't favourable to those who are pushing lockdowns and things like that. Anyway, now on saying that, it was deleted, maybe, just maybe, because I'm honest enough to admit it. Maybe I, alongside the tweet, maybe I said something inflammatory. I don't know. But does it matter? I certainly wouldn't have been insulting anybody. I would have been adding my own tuppence worth probably to the article there. But anyway, let's get my first guest on the programme. Shall we get her on? Let's get her on. It's been ages. Was very kind to me. Used to come on with me on my radio show back in Spain in the late 2009, 2010. And came on with me in London, on television in London as well. She is, of course, a former MP and a former health minister. Would you believe, one-time winner of Celebrity Mastermind and also a contestant on Strictly Come Dancing. It's a real pleasure. It's been a long time to welcome back to the programme the one and only Edwina Curry. Edwina, welcome back.
Hello. Hello, Richie. Can I just go and turn the Prime Minister off so that you and I...
Do, so we can have an at her. Thanks very much. Yeah. Been trying to follow that ourselves, of course, here in studio. Edwina is in Derbyshire, in a very nice place in Derbyshire as well. We won't give the directions, but a very nice place in Derbyshire. Edwina, are you there?
I am.
Thanks for coming back. First of all, that Celebrity Mastermind, that trophy is definitely somewhere in your house where it can't be missed. Am I right?
That's absolutely right. It's in the downstairs loo.
Oh, it's in the downstairs loo, is it? It's a loo piece. I love that. Listen,
there's a reason why we call the downstairs loo the vanity room.
The vanity room, yeah. Well, I wouldn't mind winning Celebrity Mastermind or Mastermind. You're watching Boris Johnson there, and obviously the big news today is that the claim is that more than 100,000 people now have died of coronavirus since the beginning of the pandemic, or 100,000 people that have tested positive, died within testing positive for COVID within 28 days. Can we trust those figures, Edwina? Do you have total faith in the accuracy of those figures, those numbers?
Well, I think you can argue about exactly how it's measured. I mean, in some countries, they do it closer to the time that you get a positive test. There's also an argument about whether, you know, if it says on your death certificate, COVID and diabetes, which one's actually killed you? And the answer is, of course, the combination of the two of them. If you'd had just COVID, but you'd not had diabetes, then you may well have survived. If you'd had diabetes and not caught COVID, you'd probably not be anywhere near a hospital. But the fact is that, you know, we have an older population. We have a fat population, one of the fattest populations, certainly in Europe. And we have a population that hasn't put looking after its health as its top priority for many decades. So we have a vulnerable population. In that sense, I suspect actually that it's an underestimate, and that in fact there are more people who've actually died of it, perhaps particularly people who, you know, have been in hospital for longer than 28 days, and they may not have had a test for a long time, but eventually that's what they succumb to.
We'll come back to those numbers in a moment. What I'm going to do with you is, with your permission, I disagree with much of what you have to say on this. And that's fair enough. That doesn't matter at all. Rather than me shout, well, I wouldn't shout at you anyway, but rather than me interrupt you and go at you, what we'll do is I'll read you a summary of things that other people have been saying, people like yourself, former politicians and other epidemiologists, and I'll let you respond to that. It's the right way to do it, I think, because otherwise it becomes a bully pulpit, and I certainly don't have a bully pulpit. I have a very strong opinion.
I'm good with that. Go ahead.
Oh, and I know you are. Listen, you're no shrinking violet. I've no problems with that. We've butted heads before, but I don't want to do it that way. Before we talk about lockdown and why I and others believe that lockdown is wicked and wrong, let me read something to you from Lord Sumption, the former Supreme Court Justice. He says, the sheer scale on which the government has sought to govern by decree, creating new criminal offences, sometimes several times a week, on the mere say-so of ministers, is in constitutional terms truly breathtaking. He says, this is how freedom dies when societies lose their liberty. It is not usually because some despot has crushed it under his boot. It is because people voluntarily surrendered their liberty out of the fear of some external threat. What do you say to that?
Well, what I would say is that most of what we have been doing is on the basis of legislation which has had to go through Parliament, through both houses of Parliament, and has had to convince a lot of people that it was necessary. But in any case, you could just look at compliance. And for example, if you look at the most vulnerable groups in society, the older people, including people in their 80s and 90s who lived through a world war, their compliance level is very, very high. And the reason is that they understand exactly why. They understand the reasoning behind it. They understand the necessity for being extremely careful. And they understand that, you know what, COVID ain't going to argue with you. COVID's just going to infect you and put you in hospital and make you very ill. And if you survive, you could still be very, very poorly for a long time afterwards. And most older people think it's a no-brainer that actually, you know, lockdown is not fun. Nobody likes lockdown. And many people who are being vaccinated now amongst the oldest groups have not been out of their homes since last March. But they've done it because they knew it was necessary. Now, Lord Sumption is a man who values individual freedom, as I do. But he then fails to put it in the balance with the freedom, the welfare, the health of the nation as a whole, including other people. And you have to do that. If you live in a world in which individual rights triumph over everything, then you live in a world in which society as a whole has no rights and other people have no rights. I don't want to be in that kind of world. I understand where he's coming from, and I think he's wrong.
When you talk about the health of the nation, the government has flatly refused to provide any evidence that they've modelled the effects of not doing anything against the health effects of the lockdown itself. All they've said is that lockdown itself might cause 200,000 deaths. Now, a lot of people, as you well know, a lot of other epidemiologists reckon it could be a lot more than that. And some have said we're looking at a tsunami of a health crisis coming in the near future because of people not getting treatment they should be getting during COVID, because of the mental health impacts on people and on children and all the rest of it. I won't labour the point because a half an hour today is not as long as it would be on another day. But what Sumption was trying to say when he was on The Big Questions last week, and he was horribly done in by a woeful Nicky Campbell, and furthermore, horribly done in by an even worse Piers Morgan on Good Morning Britain. What Sumption was trying to say, I think, Edwina, he was trying to say, well, look, when two people are in an emergency room and supplies are limited, one of them is very senior, one of them is very young, they'll treat the young person. What he meant by that was, if the effects of COVID, of lockdown, I should say, are going to be far more detrimental to the nation's health than the lockdown, well, we shouldn't be locking down. We're not having that argument. That our government wants to avoid that argument. And I think on that point, he's right. Go ahead.
Can I get a word in edgeways?
Well, absolutely. Go ahead.
I mean, you said there's no evidence and the government's not publishing. That is nonsense. The SAGE, the main group of, it's a mixed group of senior scientists drawn from a very large pool. It's not just a small group of individuals. We've got to know some of the main names, but there are lots of other people get drawn in when they're looking at particular issues. They publish their minutes. The data is available. The particular figure that you mentioned of 200,000 possible deaths came from the Imperial College modelling, which is available. Every line of that code is available and you can look at it. And indeed, you may rubbish it if you wish, but that was the figure that was being forecast had there been no interventions. Right. We are now at 100,000 and that figure is no longer looking as stupid as it did once. Not least because we do have interventions now. We have interventions in much better treatment. And for example, they were just saying on the press conference this evening, Sir Simon Stevens said that in hospital, the death rate has fallen from one person in three being admitted to hospital dying now to one in five. And it's still coming down because we now have treatments. So they have a whole range of readily available medications which have been thoroughly tested, thoroughly, properly, clinically trialled, and which are turning out to be a big help. We're also much better at the kind of treatments we do in hospital. We know now that you don't have to put everybody on a ventilator. We understand about proning, sleeping on the front. I'm an asthmatic. I could have told them about proning. If I want to get a good night's sleep, Richie,
so am
I have
yeah.
to lie on my front to do it. And we also have, we've taken a whole range of different social measures, including social distancing, washing, wearing masks, and the lockdowns. Without any of those, I fear that Imperial College would have proved to be absolutely right.
Can I disagree? Can I disagree? Let me disagree. And I'll be brief this time. I won't be as long-winded. I'll be brief. There's no evidence whatsoever that wearing masks does anything to prevent transmission
that's
of it. Don't jump in. I'm not interrupting you. Please don't interrupt me. Anthony Fauci, who's heading up the US response to COVID, Chris Whitty, Patrick Vallance, the World Health Organization themselves, pre-coronavirus 19, said that there was no evidence whatsoever that wearing masks prevents the spread of any infection, nor does it prevent you getting it. That's number one. Now, number two.
And what are they saying now? That was before. What are they saying a year what, on?
Exactly, but they're saying it based on no studies whatsoever. None.
Not true.
It's arbitrary nonsense, Edwina. It's arbitrary nonsense. One, hang on a second. It's one day, masks don't do anything. The next day, masks, you've got to wear masks. Go ahead.
I don't mind having a discussion with you on principles, but every time you say there's no evidence.
There is no evidence.
But that's that's not true. There's loads of evidence about mask wearing.
Well, cite me a study then, and I'll cite you one that says that wearing masks is absolutely useless.
That's not what you asked me on for.
That's where you're going. You're going with the whole thing of, oh, Richie, you're saying that masks are absolutely... I can cite studies that say mask wearing is useless.
Richie, you're not even following the stuff that's readily available online. You should look at the stuff from a whole host of really effective and
important... But you can't cite one.
If you had given me notice, sweetheart...
But you must have known we were going to talk about masks. Look, I won't split hairs with you. Go on.
In any case, it must be fairly obvious to everybody concerned. If the masks are so useless, how come we've got everybody in hospital in full PPE? And that has managed to stop the deaths of medics and nurses and people who were coming into contact with COVID patients. How come actually dentists for 30 years have been wearing masks? I'll tell you why they've been doing that. It's not to prevent us breathing their halitosis or even theirs ours. It's because of HIV. That is something that was changed when I was a health minister, because we were concerned that dentists might be either catching infection or infecting people inadvertently. If you don't like wearing a mask, just say, I don't like wearing a mask. But please don't try and rationalise it. That is
well, hang on a second. I've had luminaries like Sacharit Bakhti and Martin Kulldorff. Sacharit Bakhti, he's a German epidemiologist. He's very famous. Martin Kulldorff is a scientist from Harvard University, very famous. Dr. Vernon Coleman, who you know very well from the British press and from writing books.
There's plenty of research that shows.
And these guys have produced research that says that wearing masks is absolutely nonsensical. It does nothing to prevent spread of transmission.
Look, I'm going. I can't be bothered.
You're going to walk off the programme?
Yeah.
But I mean, that's terrible. Why would you do that? Because I'm presenting somebody else's opinion. You don't like it, so you're going to leave the programme.
Yeah, but you're talking nonsense.
But I'm not. So Martin Kulldorff is not nonsense. He's a Harvard scientist.
No,
what's wrong
I'm
with
so
you?
Sorry. I've got other things to.
And she's gone. Edwina Curry, former health minister. And I didn't even get to talking about the Portuguese High Court, which declared in November that the PCR tests are absolutely worthless. I was only warming up. So I was. I had a feeling she might walk off the programme. So there you are. Ah, well, what are you going to do? And that's what you're faced with. This is what you're faced with. This is what Dr. Vernon Coleman said. He said they will not debate with somebody like him or somebody like me. They will not come on programmes like this because what they are saying doesn't stand up to scrutiny. There is no evidence that masks prevent the spread of transmission. When this began in January, February last year, the same people who are telling us today that wearing masks saves lives were saying back then that masks are fucking useless. They were. I'm not making it up. And when they decided overnight to say, we want you to wear masks, please wear masks, they didn't base that on any new emerging evidence that somehow changed the game, transformed the landscape in terms of scientific evidence. There was no evidence. It was totally arbitrary. Wear the mask. Well, hang on a second, for what? You know? It's incredible, this. I like Edwina Curry. I've always liked her. I admired her when we spoke in London some years ago, and I gave her a bit of stick about Jimmy Savile, because Edwina was involved with getting Jimmy Savile, well, not getting him access to hospitals, but she appointed him the head of some charity, didn't she? Let me just see, can I find that? I don't want to give you any incorrect information. I wouldn't do that here. But let me get that here now. It's very important I don't get this wrong. But yeah, she was health minister at the time that Jimmy Savile was given access to a hospital. I think it's Broadmoor. It could be Broadmoor. Correct me if I'm wrong. And I brought her on anyway to talk about that and to challenge her about that and to have a go at her about that. And she was very good and she came on and spoke very eloquently. But walking off a programme because you don't like what the presenter is saying to you, because you don't like the fact that there are experts, real experts out there, like Martin Kulldorff, like Sacharit Bhakti, like Martin, like Carl Hennigan, like Sunetra Gupta. You don't like that they're out there saying things that you don't agree with. And of course, this is the whole point. And after asking her about the PCR tests, my next question would have been to her, as somebody who values freedom, are you happy? Are you happy that these people whose names I've just mentioned are excluded from the conversation about how to tackle coronavirus? Are you happy with that? Would have been one of my next questions for her. I've got a list of points here I was going to put to her. I was going to say, Edwina, you broke the Salmonella story, didn't you? You broke the Salmonella story. You had the balls to tell the truth as health minister about the fact that Salmonella was a problem in British eggs. And they ridiculed you. They laughed at you. They humiliated you. And yet we found out only 10 years later that the whole thing was covered up and that you were right all along and that you'd been hung out to dry. So I would have said, how could you be believing the government now? And Sage, these people, when they tell you that 100,000 people have died of coronavirus, when the PCR test is worthless, when 30,000 that we know of, if that 100,000 is real and it isn't, that 30,000 have died in care homes because they were abandoned there, because they were sealed into those care homes, not looked after properly. And by not looked after properly, I don't mean by the care home staff. I mean by the authorities, who then emptied out hospitals, didn't they, to make room for the influx of coronavirus patients, which never happened. And the people emptied out of hospitals were senior citizens, were sent back into those care homes, and they had all sorts of respiratory infections. And you had the epidemic in care homes. I was going to ask her about that as well. I was going to ask her, why was COVID downgraded from a highly consequential infectious disease last March by her own government? But I can't ask her that because she fucking walked off the programme. Jesus Christ. Oh, God. Well, we won't be hearing Edwina Curry on the Richie Allen Show again, I suppose. What are you going to do? And she's normally very good when she's challenged. But I don't know. Maybe it's personal to Edwina. Her husband, a former policeman called John, who's a very nice guy, died of cancer not too long ago. And maybe, I don't want to sound misogynistic now and claim that she's emotional or high-strung. I don't want to say that. And I'm not saying that. But it might be a personal thing. She obviously believes this. That's the thing. She's not a shill. She's not a shill. She's not a bastard. She feckin' believes it. Hook, line and sinker. And maybe, believing it as much as she does, she believes that anybody doing the job that I'm doing is maybe in, I don't know, maybe putting people's lives at risk. Maybe. And that's where we are. And I want to go back to something I said a minute ago. I thought she might, at some stage, give up. But that's not why I brought her on. I didn't do that for that reason. I brought her on because I can't get to debate anybody about this stuff. They won't debate me. And I'm not a doctor. I know nothing about medicine. You know, they won't debate me. I've invited them all on. They won't come on. But anyway, look, what are you going to do? Yeah. Number of you are interested. And I was also going to point out to her that under her government, and not just her government, Labour were just as bad. In fact, Labour were worse in the 90s under Blair and Brown, the war criminals. That in the last 30 years, beds have halved in the United Kingdom. They have halved, I was going to say to her. We used to have 300,000 beds in 1988. We've now got 140,000. I mean, you used to have 300,000. You've now got 140,000. The country has grown in population by a large city every year since then. And at the same time, the amount of staff has gone down. More people need hospitals every year because every winter, as I said last night on the programme, people are absolutely, hospitals are chock-a-block with people with respiratory infections. Old people. Old people. Mostly. And I've never said ever that you should ignore old people. Ah, fuck them, you know. They've had their time. No! What did Vernon Coleman say to me either last night or 2 weeks back on this radio programme? If they believed last year that there was a deadly pandemic circumnavigating the globe, what would they have done? They would have anticipated that things would have been very bad in the winter of 2021. Therefore, they would have supplemented the most vulnerable people in the country with the vitamins, or vitamins as we say here, that they need, namely vitamin D, vitamin D3, zinc and vitamin C. The whole thing is nonsense. And when people are confronted with facts that they don't like, well, they bury their head in the sand, or sadly, like Edwina, they run off the programme. Now, I'm not grandstanding here, so we'll leave it go. You know, we'll leave it go for now. What have we got? We've got REM lined up, I think. This is The One I Love. On the Richie Allen Radio Show. Live from Salford. REM on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Let me clear up that thing I said about Jimmy Savile. I had a really interesting back and forth with Edwina Curry in 2013 in London about Jimmy Savile. When she was junior health minister, she was involved in giving Jimmy Savile the job of heading up a task force to run the psychiatric hospital Broadmoor. Now, she didn't know anything about Jimmy Savile or what Jimmy Savile was, and I'm absolutely convinced of that. There's no evidence to suggest she did at all. And it was often said that she gave Savile the keys to the hospital. She didn't. She did not give Savile the keys to the hospital. Others gave Savile the keys to the hospital, where he had access to the place basically day and night. And he had access to teenage girls there, some of them very unwell teenage girls. And he did a lot of very bad things in Broadmoor. But she fronted that up when I interviewed her in London those years ago. And I always admired that, you know, because at the time, the Savile thing was obviously very hot. It was red hot at the time. But I go back to what she did when she was health minister, when she warned the public that British eggs had salmonella. And she did, and took an absolute hiding for that. Wasn't protected. Got absolutely mullered from pillar to post and had to resign over it. And in the end, we found out that she was right all along. And that was something I would have explored with her, you know, all things being equal. I don't try to score points off of people when I interview them. I don't try to, I'm not, you know, claiming in any way that I'm better or that I know any more than they do. I'm well aware of what Sage is telling the UK government. We're all very, very well aware of what Sage is telling the UK government. The problem is there are thousands of scientists around the world. Many of them have qualifications that supersede the members of Sage. And they're saying that locking people down is insane because lockdowns don't stop people getting sick. In fact, they make people sicker. She was talking about elderly people and vulnerable people. I mean, I've heard from a lot of senior citizens, and this is not conjecture or hearsay. I'm talking about lots. People who say, I remember I was speaking to a lady in, I won't mention her, but she's a lady who is well known in Salford for walking her dog. Lovely lady, senior lady. She's in her late 70s, right? And she's well known. And we were talking about protecting the vulnerable. And you know what she said to me? I'll never forget it. She said, you see these 15, 16, 17 year olds. You see these 19, 20 year olds. They'll never get these years back, Richie, she said. They'll never get these years back. Their lives are being ruined. They shouldn't be ruining their lives to protect me. I've had a good life up to this point. If I decide, she said, that I need to lock myself indoors, I will do that. I won't expect anybody else to do it for me. And then she said, but I wouldn't lock myself indoors anyway because it's unhealthy. I'll go for a walk as long as I can. Get the fresh air. I'll take the vitamins. But I won't forget her saying that they'll never get those years back again. Why should we ask them to give up their lives, to do themselves enormous damage? And nobody can really quantify that damage. Nobody really has any idea of just how bad it might get. She said, oh, there has been, the government has modelled what lockdown will do. It hasn't. It's produced a very cursory couple of pages estimating that 200,000 people might die. That's bollocks. That's not a proper examination in any way. Nor is it independent. Because the same arseholes like Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance, who should be hanging from their scrotums from the Tower of London, criminals, they're the same guys who advocate for even stronger lockdown. So don't go and ask those guys and Sage, what do you think it'll do to people just by the fact that they've been locked down? How will the lockdown affect people? They're not going to tell the truth. They're in favour of lockdown. There has been no independent cross, how do I say cross opinion, but variety of people coming from different parts of academia, pro and anti-lockdown, to honestly sit down and spend proper time evaluating what lockdowns do to people's health. That has not happened. And there's a reason it hasn't happened. Because that group would come back and say, Jesus Christ, end the lockdowns now. End them today. That's the problem, you see, that we're having. Tony Gosling should be with me in a few minutes' time live from Bristol. I will read some of your tweets in a moment. I will read some of your tweets in a moment. Before that, though, this.
Thanks to you, The Richie Allen Show is the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. Show your support for this unique broadcaster by making a regular financial contribution. Just the price of a cup of coffee each month will make a massive difference. Visit richieallen.co.uk for details.
I've just had a text from Edwina Curry saying, I'm not prepared to engage with no evidence arguments when there's plenty. But there isn't plenty. That's the problem. There is no evidence. There is no peer-reviewed evidence that public wearing of face coverings in any way prevents transmission of infection to others or protects you from infection from them. There is none. None. Sadly. You see, you lose the argument. The minute you, it's nice of her to text me back, I suppose. The minute you walk off a radio programme, when you start hearing names like Martin Kulldor from Harvard, Sacharit Bhakti from Germany, I could have mentioned Dolores Cahill. The minute you run off a radio programme, you've lost. It's game over. 3-0, bingo, finished, job done. You've lost the argument. You haven't run off the programme because I've been rude or obnoxious or obtuse or because I've not been letting you get a word in edgeways even. No, no, you've run off the programme because you have no legitimate argument. None. That's how it is. Like it or lump it. It's a minute past six. Let's have another tune. Let's see where Tony is. And I will read some tweets, as I promised, when we come back. This is Fleetwood Mac on the Richie Allen Radio Show. It's Tuesday's programme, the 26th of January, 2021. Bizarrely, Edwina appears to be listening to the programme and has now sent me a couple of links to studies that will prove that mask wearing is efficacious, even though she says, oh, you won't read them anyway. But you see, the problem is I will read them. I'm a journalist. I'm a real journalist. And I'm fair. Of course I'll read them. She says, oh, you won't read them, which is ironic because I was mentioning the epidemiologists and I was mentioning the studies and I was mentioning the fact that the Sage guys were saying before, only weeks before they changed their minds, they were saying, don't wear masks. Or, excuse me, let me be honest, they were saying that there isn't any evidence that wearing masks, you know, is helpful in preventing transmission. And she acknowledged that. If you listen back, she acknowledged that. And then she said, but what did they say later? Yes, they changed their minds. They changed their minds, but they didn't present any evidence. They presented no evidence, which is why I declare it to be arbitrary. Totally arbitrary. You don't get to say on week one, listen, mask wearing is not really helpful. We don't recommend it. No. And then a couple of weeks later say, oh, we want you all to wear masks now. Please mask up. Please. Without providing peer-reviewed evidence. And by the way, that sort of study would take months, if not 12 months, if not 18 months to properly, you know, to undertake it properly. Crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. I'm waiting for Tony Gosling to join us. He might actually be running a bit late. It's turning out to be one of those days. So it is. Let me just send him a quick text while we're live on air. This is the beauty of having no producer, no editor. It's just myself. It's just myself. Let me read a few tweets then while we're waiting for Tony. I'm not going to read out any tweets that are being very rude about Edwina Curry, by the way. Mad Monk says, coming through loud and clear in Where? In Canada, Richie, it's minus 20 degrees here today. Wow. Minus 20 degrees. Wow. That is cold. There's me complaining this morning. It was minus 3. Hi to Daz, by the way. Trucker says, ask her back with evidence, Richie. There isn't any evidence. There's none. Diane says, has anybody ever walked out on you before, Richie? The answer is yes. It's happened a few times over the years. Back in my Marbella days, I had a debate going between Tommy Robinson, believe it or not, and Anjam Chowdhury, who was convicted of terrorism offences, wasn't he, Anjam? He's out of prison now, and these days he's probably being watched like a hawk by MI5, MI6, Bodie and Doyle, Dempsey and Makepeace. God knows who else is watching him, but Anjam is under surveillance, there's no doubt. But I had Robinson on with Anjam Chowdhury, and it was all going swimmingly until Robinson foolishly accused Anjam Chowdhury and Islam in general of being fond of beating up women. And I said, but Tommy, weren't you arrested by a police officer who was off duty because he saw you assaulting your then girlfriend? And Tommy hung up, and that was the end of that. But it's happened a few times over the years. Hi to Alexandra as well. You prepare for it. You know it's going to happen sometimes. Let me scroll on down now. A lot of tweets on that. Yeah, we're going to move on from it now because really there's no point in dwelling on it. You know, it's a perfect example of how the science doesn't stack up when it comes to lockdown, when it comes to mask wearing. And I'm going to do this because Tony Gosling is running a bit late. And he's left me down before as well, Tony Gosling. And I won't be happy if he's not there because I reminded him earlier on. I don't take kindly to that. But before I condemn Tony, we'll give him a few minutes to be there. He should have been there 5 minutes ago. Here's a couple of facts then. And you can take these facts if you want. I'm going to sound like Rafa Benitez again, the much maligned former Liverpool manager who went on a fact rant some years ago when he was wound up by Sir Alex Ferguson, the former Manchester United manager. He went on a bit of a rant about facts. I'm going to give a few facts. This is not conjecture. This is not conjecture. No conjecture. This is pure fact. Okay? Very important. You can take this segment of the programme, you can record it if you want, download the MP3, cut it up and put it on your social media. The Court of Appeal in Lisbon said in November that the PCR test is unable to determine beyond a reasonable doubt that a positive result corresponds, in fact, to the infection of a person by the SARS-CoV-2 virus. The court deemed the test to be totally unreliable. And it went on to say, the court did, that if you get a PCR test and it shows up positive, there's actually a 90%+ chance that the test itself is wrong, that it's a false positive. That's fact number one. Fact number two, the World Health Organization last week, 10 days ago, sent out a directive, talked about this yesterday, telling governments to tell their health departments not to trust a positive test from an asymptomatic person. Don't trust a positive test from an asymptomatic person, they said. Test them again, because the PCR test is unreliable. Because we know that you're amplifying the samples more times than you should be, cycling them. We know this. You're supposed to not do it any more than 30, but in the UK, for example, NHS, they're cycling these things 40 times. Meaning, as luminaries, like the aforementioned people have mentioned on this programme, they've said that, well, it picks up any old bits of virus and bits of shite in your system from God knows when. Fact. Total fact. I mentioned earlier on about the UK hospital bed capacity halving since 1988, while the country some years has gained in population by a city the size of Cardiff. You know, every winter we're snowed under, we're swamped, we can't do anything. Is it worse this winter? It might be. Why is it worse this winter? Because they tell nurses and doctors that are absolutely fine, you've tested positive for COVID, you should go home. Well, that just shits all over the remaining staff in that hospital and makes their lives unbearable, doesn't it? Not to mention the fact that they've decreased the bed capacity even further by socially distancing the beds. So the argument that the hospitals are being overwhelmed, therefore we have proof there's a pandemic, that's bullshit. There's no proof whatsoever. None. It remains a fact to this day that the average age of somebody dying with coronavirus is 82. 82. The average life expectancy here in the UK is 81. If you get coronavirus, 99.5% of us will survive it. We'll be fine. We'll be okay. We'll move on. We'll get on with the rest of our lives. Those are facts. Those are not the opinions of a big baldy gammon with a big mouth in Salford who wants to be right or wants to be seen as somebody who knows what he's talking about. Those are facts. They are irrefutable. And I don't even think they are disputed. We don't know because neither Piers Morgan, that useless, dickless wonder Piers Morgan, nor Neil Paterson on Sky News Breakfast, nor Susanna Reid, none of them have had the courage to do their jobs and put those points that I've just made to UK government ministers. Dickless. Dickless wonders. Cowards. They value money. They value celebrity. They value status more than they value you and me or doing their job. Because it's easy to do your job. I just demonstrated how to do your job. You've got somebody on you disagree with, put some points to them and let them answer. But they won't do that. When they get Matt Hancock on, or Nadeem Zahawi, the vaccine minister, they harangue, harass and bully them over not locking down sooner. Why didn't you lock down sooner? Are you embarrassed about the death rate? Have you got blood on your hands? That's not fucking journalism. That's nonsense. Real journalism is to say, listen, where's the proof that we should be locking the country down like this? Ruining children's lives. Ruining their teenage years. Destroying the job prospects of tens of thousands of people. Hundreds of thousands. Killing God knows how many. Killing them. Because of what lockdown is doing to them. Not treating them. People who are on their last legs with cancer. Renal problems. Liver problems. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, no, it's all COVID today. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm turning you away today. Why? It's just COVID today. It's just COVID today. It's madness. It's madness, folks. You and I know it's madness. I think increasingly more and more people know it's madness. Maybe the last American vagabond, Ryan Christian, was right. Maybe most people begin. Maybe they do know. Maybe people just don't have the courage, maybe. Maybe they don't have the guts to admit it, that it's a scam. Because admitting it means that maybe for people, the acknowledgement of it or admitting it maybe means that, well, I've got to do something now. And that's a place a lot of people maybe don't want to be.
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
No sign of Tony Gosling. Tony is letting me down. That wouldn't be the first time he's done that. I'm not happy about that, but there you go. That's the way it goes. He was supposed to be on the programme with me discussing these issues and more. I'm going to have a quick look at the BBC website because the UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson delivered a press briefing just after 5 o'clock. He was flanked by, as usual, Chris Whitty, the Chief Medical Officer, and the head of NHS England was alongside him as well. What did they say? Well, they expressed sorrow at the country passing 100,000 deaths. Deeply sorry for every life that has been lost at Boris Johnson. Taking, he said, full responsibility for everything the government has done. The Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, said the figure was heartbreaking. Keir Starmer called it a national tragedy. And that's about the size of it, really. That's what's come out of that briefing. Neil Ferguson, whose modelling on coronavirus was so ridiculous, it was beyond laughable, is now claiming, he's been speaking to Radio 4 this afternoon, he's now claiming that if we had a lockdown early autumn, if we had a lockdown sooner, back in early autumn, and remained locked down for the entire period, more lives would have been saved. He was on the PM programme on BBC Radio 4. These lunatics are being given open door access to the national airwaves. These complete psychopaths like Niall Ferguson, the guy of the 500,000 deaths. Do you remember him? The guy who broke his own government's lockdown regulations, the regulations that he called for. Remember Niall Ferguson, that goon having the affair? He was caught out, remember? Remember? He's been on the BBC Radio 4 PM programme saying that we should have locked down in autumn and we would have saved more lives. They give an open door access to guys like him, and yet the, I'm not going to mention them by name again, the many scientists who disagree with the approach that has been taken and warn that it will result in a worse outcome overall, they can't get arrested. They can't get arrested, let alone get an interview on national television or radio here in the UK. This is tyranny. This is fascism. This is what it looks like. It's a police state out there. You have police running around telling people to get up off of park benches. Get up off that park bench there now, you. I'm just sitting here minding my own business and I'm on my own. Get up out of it or I'll fine you. Get up out of it or I'll fucking fine you. That's where we are now. People walking in parks. Who are you? What are you doing here? Where did you come from? Have you got a reasonable excuse for being outside? How about you fuck off? How about that? How about the very fact that I was born on this planet? How about the very fact that I was born on this planet gives me the fucking right to go where I want to go? So long as I'm respecting people, people's property, and people's own right to liberty. As long as I'm not stealing from people or assaulting people, I'm entitled to go about my business. That's where we are. And you got these guys going on national television and radio saying that it's not good enough, this lockdown, which is killing loads more, far more people than any virus ever could. It's not good enough. It needs to be worse. It needs to be harder. We need to quarantine people coming into the country. The Irish. Lunatics. It's a lunatic asylum in Dublin. The Taoiseach, which is the Irish Deputy Prime Minister, Leo Varadkar, the merry Indian. Leo Varadkar. Used to be Prime Minister, used to be the Taoiseach. He'll be the Taoiseach again, apparently. It's just a fucking basket case in Ireland. It's a basket case. The public rejected Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Doesn't matter, they're in power anyway. I will take it in turns. You be Taoiseach this year and I'll be Taoiseach next year. And never the twain shall meet. No, all of that bollocks. And Leo Varadkar is calling for a quarantine for about a year. Including quarantining Irish people coming back to the homeland. So friends of mine who live in Manchester, friends of mine who live in London, Irish people, friends of mine, won't be able to go to the UK, presumably, or to Spain or anywhere else, because when they come back, they'll be quarantining for 10 days to 2 weeks. And the Irish government wants the full shebang. The whole lot of it. Wants it all. The tag, the security guards at the hotels that you'll be confined to. They're all in lockstep. They're going to announce something very similar in the UK very soon. Here's another tune. What a day it's been. This is the Doobie Brothers, Long Train Running. Great track, kid. That was me leaving the fader up there. Tony Gosling, you've emerged. Where are you?
Hi, Richie. Yeah, so sorry about that. I had to get a letter out. Otherwise, I was going to be evicted from my house.
All right.
I had to do a bloody letter tonight.
Well, that's not good,
about
mate.
Housing benefit. And to be honest with you, it took a bit of priority and you slipped my mind. But I'm just back from the post office, so
well, that's,
absolutely
that's,
up for it.
That sounds serious, pal. I hope that's going to be okay there. You're making me feel guilty now.
I don't think I'm the only person. And I'm having this to go through this thing called a benefit review, which I had to get a letter this morning. And they need the information immediately, basically. Otherwise, you just get an eviction notice and out you go. So that's my situation, I'm afraid.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, T. Can we stay with that for a minute? I understood that this government had made a provision for people that they couldn't, in this time of lockdown and people not being able to work, that they couldn't be evicted. What's happened to that?
No, you're absolutely right, but the Bristol City Council have stopped paying my housing benefit, as I just realised. And so my landlords are onto me. They're onto me saying, right, you know, you're now in default, blah, blah. So it's basically about keeping a roof over my head. As I understand it, I wouldn't have been evicted, or I still won't be evicted until the end of this lockdown. But that doesn't mean to say that I don't want to be in that position where when the lockdown finishes, I'm out of my ear.
Well, good luck with it, mate. Like you said, you're not the first person to say that to me. It's been pretty eventful here. I had the former health minister, Edwina Curry, on the programme, arguing about lockdowns and their, you know, their necessity and whether or not they're helpful or unhelpful. And she didn't like some of the things that were being said, so she walked off the programme, which is surprising because I've interviewed her many times before, and many times before it got heated, talking about mask wearing and stuff like that. So it's been a bizarre kind of day anyway. Look, I'll ask you this. The government says that 104,000 people have died within 28 days of getting a positive test for COVID. Basically, they said we've passed 100,000. I don't buy that. Do you buy it?
The statistic stands, but the question is what's behind the statistic. The World Health Organization came out last week with an absolutely devastating press release and statement, and that was that the PCR tests are not reliable, and that if you get a positive PCR test, that does not prove that you've got any kind of infection. But what you need to do is they're talking specifically about people that test positive on the PCR test, but have no symptoms. And they're saying, well, if you've got no symptoms and you've tested positive, you must have another test in order to have some sort. I mean, maybe that would be a lateral flow test or some other type of, COVID test in order to clinically confirm that you actually have COVID. Now, that has gone really almost unnoticed certainly in the press, but also in government policy. So there's no immediate intervention by the government to say, okay, well, anyone that tests positive without symptoms is no longer has to be considered as if they're spreading it or whatever, and no longer has to isolate. They haven't said that at all. So, you know, what we're dealing with here, I think, is an enormous amount of trickery. And the other thing about this WHO announcement is they're saying, which is something that people like you and I I've certainly been saying it, I don't know about you, but is that the lower the actual rate of disease, the higher the false positive rate on the PCR test appears. So if you imagine if you've got 1,000 people and you're testing them and 10 of them have actually got COVID, well, you're going to get probably 10 times more people testing with false positives for COVID than you've actually got real COVID. So, you know, you're looking at 1,000 people that get tested under the current regime. You could be in a situation where the vast majority, 10 times more, are false positives rather than people that actually have COVID. So basically it's a game that's being played, I think, at the moment in order to boost the numbers. We know already that January is the worst year for the National Health Service for intensive care units. And we've also got a whole load of staff who are off having to isolate. So the NHS is obviously not going to be able to cope. And I've seen lots of stories of queues of ambulances outside intensive care units, particularly here in where I am at the moment in Gloucestershire, in outside Gloucester Hospital. And the reason for that is because they've closed A&E at Cheltenham. And also because at this time of year, there is always a massive stress on the NHS. So anybody that's at the front line of the NHS will tell you this kind of thing happens every time this year. And a lot, it's all being blamed by people like Matt Hancock, Chris Whitty, and the rest of these revolving doors big pharma agents who are now in Downing Street, well, not in Downing Street, but in Sage and in Nerve Tag, the two people are basically making policy for Boris. Boris is not involved. He just announces things. In fact, the other day he announced something, didn't he? Where he was saying that this new strain of the virus is more deadly. No. Immediately, various experts said, you're talking rubbish, Boris. Actually, we don't know that.
He was contradicted by NerveTag. This is very important. He said the new Kent strain, he was standing alongside Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance, two career lawyers, and they said the new Kent strain might be, it looks like 30% more serious or more deadly, and he had no evidence to back that up, none whatsoever. And the following day, well done, Tony, well done, NerveTag, which is a government advisory group, of course, they came out and said on new and infectious emerging diseases, new emerging respiratory infections, blah, blah, blah. They said no. They said no, we're not that sure about that at all, they said. Liars. They're just lawyers.
Yeah, basically what we're looking at is public relations for the pharmaceutical industry and Big Pharma. That's what we're getting every night on the television. And we're getting no interrogation whatsoever from any journalists, as far as I can see, apart from on talk radio, at all, at any of these press conferences, where they are just, it seems to me, trying to make a case for this to go on forever.
And ever, amen. And something else you said that is massive news is the news that the World Health Organization said don't trust the positive test from the asymptomatic person. Now, you said earlier on, you said no talk in government circles, and certainly the media didn't talk about it. And here's where it gets very sinister. We know that they know about that. It's incomprehensible that the UK government would not have gotten that directive from the WHO. We know they did. And we know that some of the media got it, because you mentioned talk radio here in the UK. Julia Hartley Brewer made this point on her programme the other morning. She's on national radio in the UK. I mention it. I don't have a national audience here in the UK, but they do know this. So I conclude, and I think I'm entitled to make this leap, I conclude by the nature of the fact that they haven't addressed it. It's because it's for very sinister reasons, because it basically eviscerates their story, their claim that there are so many cases, that there are so many cases of COVID around the country, when there might not be.
No, I think you're right. I think there is a new strain out. I mean, I'm coughing a little bit myself. I sound like I've got it, but I actually did get a negative PCR test last week, amazingly. So I don't think, I mean, whatever it is I had was just an ordinary cough, which, you know, I would actually say it's to your listeners, there's nothing wrong with just going in and trying out these walk-in test centres. The people who work in them are fantastic. They're really nice. And you will at least get some sort of indication as to how all this thing works. I was really impressed with them. They're very safe. You know, if I had to have, did have COVID, you know, there's no way they would have caught it, because they're all kind of distance. Yeah. And you do your own test. You sit in a little booth. And I got the result within less than 24 hours, you know, which is pretty good, really.
Can I just say this? Can I just say this? Some of our listeners and some of your I won't say fans, but you've got a lot of listeners and a lot of followers. You've got a lot of listeners and a lot of followers. They will say, Tony, I won't do that. I don't want the government having my DNA on file. What do you say to that?
Well, I don't know if they do keep your DNA. I doubt it. And I think what happens there is that you're just getting a result as to, and it may be that they get the wrong result, but I mean, I went along just to see what it was like and to see if I could get I actually went and paid for a 120 quid at Boots, which was a total nightmare, and it took about 4 hours of going backwards and forwards from there to home to get a test to go abroad, and I got a negative test, so I could have gone abroad. But I thought, the same day I suddenly thought, well, why not go and take the government test, the NHS one? And the government one, I just felt it was so much better run, much more efficient, and I didn't have to pay for it, and I got exactly the same result, which was negative, you know, which is, it's interesting to know. But of course, there's a lot of people out there that are not doing a lot of things because they're afraid of either being tracked and traced and locked down, or of even contracting this new strain of COVID. They don't want to go to hospital. They don't want to go anywhere where they think that they might catch something. And so that's affected everybody massively. I mean, I'm just walking down the street today, and you look around and you think, I cannot believe that the country has gone into this, what seems to me a complete form of permanent hysteria, where we're not actually, I mean, it's mind control. What we've got here is fear. fear being used as has been used over the centuries just to enslave people, literally to turn people against themselves. And also, it's a bit, you know, nobody can actually see this virus unless you've got a microscope. And even when you go and get tested for it, you might get a positive when actually you don't have it. And the most incredible thing, I think, of all of this entire episode is the way that the new reality has come about, where you can have no symptoms whatsoever. You feel perfectly well, and yet you are a super spreader and you have to be isolated in your home, and you are convinced yourself that you are sick, even though there's absolutely nothing wrong with you at all. I think that is an absolute achievement of the evil mind controllers to actually manage to persuade people that they are sick when they've got literally nothing wrong with them at all, which is an incredible thing to have done, really. And it shows that we're really a little bit like sheep, aren't we? We kind of do what we're told. And I think this is going to head for a massive sort of collision, really, between the populace, I don't know about other countries, but certainly here in Britain, and elected governments. And I think maybe that is the purpose of all this, Richie, really, is to get us to give up our relationship with democracy and to put us into the hands of some sort of elite who will put themselves forward as, you know, we are so much better at running things than those silly old parliamentarians. Why do you need to vote? What a waste of time.
You might very well be right. Tony Gosling is our guest. I've told you all about Tony earlier on in the programme. You know who he is. A great journalist, former BBC journalist, the host of the Politics Show in Bristol. Tony, a number of people are saying on Twitter as well, very journalistic of Tony going to see the PCR test and how it's done. Totally understand that. Absolutely understandable why Tony would want to do that. But others are saying if the PCR tests are so unreliable, which they seem to be, by going to have that test, we're making it easier for the government to say that we're positive, basically, and add us to the numbers. So there is that too.
Well, I just wanted to put myself through the process. I mean, this is maybe going to all be gone in a few years, well, a month's time, God knows. But, you know, I've been moaning about these tests and analysing them, and I've been interviewing many doctors who've been very critical of them. By the way, I always have to, if I'm on your show, Richie, put in a plug for ivermectin and for chloroquine, these two substances, which cost something like 50 pence a tablet. They've been around for many years and they save lives. The recent survey on ivermectin, which I was interviewing a doctor from Guernsey's Princess Royal Hospital at the accident emergency there, he was saying that we've got something like 75% of people's lives have been saved with ivermectin in ivermectin trials as against the control groups. So this stuff needs to be being used all over the Western world. Yeah. And yet we're being told, he said himself personally, he sent a letter to Jeremy Greenstock at Sage back in November. He didn't get a reply, so he sent another letter at the beginning of January. He still hasn't had a reply to that about ivermectin, saying, have you seen all these studies that show that this very cheap, long-term, been-around drug can save 75% of early-stage COVID patients' lives? And why aren't you even replying to my letter? So this is another aspect of this, is that people like Greenstock, and by the way, of course, for people that don't know, he's also the chair of the Wellcome Foundation, which is another massive pharmaceutical foundation that's invested enormously in research and in vaccines. These people all want the right to vaccinate us mandatorily. And if we don't get their mandatory vaccine, they're going to stop us traveling. Effectively, they're going to be part of a kind of China authoritarian system in the Western world if we let them, Richie.
Yeah, it's undeniable now. Even last year, I mean, I used to be very careful with people last year. And by careful, I mean, I was self-censoring, not on the radio program, but dealing with people who didn't know anything about me and didn't know anything about the radio show. Very, you know, very careful about what to say to people. It's undeniable now. This is where it's going, you know. The whole thing is falling apart, the whole story that a deadly disease, as I said earlier, is circumnavigating the globe. It obviously is not. Nobody is denying. At least I'm not. And I don't mind if people want to deny that COVID exists. They can if they want. I won't censor you. And I'm not trying to say that it definitely does exist. I don't know. But I nearly died last January. That's not an exaggeration. I was in a desperate condition. Horrendous. I've never felt anything like it. It took me 3.5 weeks to get over it. I'm prepared to accept that nasty, you know, respiratory infection is out there. It's happening. It's there. They've taken advantage of it. And they wargamed this stuff, Tony, didn't they, back in 2019? They wargamed it. That's no joke.
They do. They did. They do. They being effectively a kind of oligarchy that but like to think that they run the Western world. I mean, the other thing to say, I think, is there. And I was chatting to somebody in the high street in Stroud today, 2 metres away, you'll be glad to hear. And talking to them about this, and they agreed that it all seems to be a bit like the Brexit Project Fear. You remember all the Remainiacs who were saying the world is going to collapse if we do what the people elected
right.
and
yeah.
voted to do in 2016. Everything's going to be a terrible disaster. There's going to be, you know, no food and various, you know, whatever. The economy is going to collapse. Well, actually, they forced the economy to collapse anyway. But I think we're dealing with is something very similar to that Project Fear that was happening in Brexit. And the amazing thing is, most of the people I know, personal friends, including Martin Summers, who's on my show every week on a Friday, all were very, very, I mean, fanatically anti-Brexit, are also fanatically pro-mask, fanatically pro-knockdown. So I would suggest to you what we're dealing with here is basically Project Fear 2 and a kind of massive overreaction by the global elite, the oligarchy, that basically are, I mean, you can paraphrase them as the Anglo-Zionist Empire. That is to say, the elites of Israel, Britain and America mainly, but many others in Europe, obviously Germany and France too, that these people have decided that because their little project has been scuppered by the Brits, that they are actually going to punish the whole planet for it. They're almost like a bunch of kids who've thrown their toys out of the pram because their wonderful little Brussels project has all gone so badly wrong.
Yeah.
And the Brits have shown the way for other countries, many, of course, like Italy, Spain, Germany even, the French with their yellow vests were very anti-Brussels. They've all had enough of it. And maybe this project has been sunk by us, but they're not going to let us, the world get away, I think, without a fight. And I would suggest that they are behind this. I mean, I haven't really got any evidence to suggest that. It's circumstantial. Look at the Wuhan lab where this all came from. This is a Pentagon program being run in there, the gain of function program by the Pentagon that Obama stopped happening in the United States, and they had to close down their biological weapons lab at Fort Detrick. So they started doing this over in Wuhan, the Pentagon did. Of course, this is all covered by military secrecy. Very easy to make sure the press don't get a hold of this, but some people like Whitney Webb, etc., and Diliana Gutasheva have dug this stuff out.
So people
and
can
the
see.
Gain of function, if you just think about what that means, the gain of function research that the Americans were embarked on and they transferred to Wuhan, this is really important because gain of function means various things. Two main things, really. One is that you get a virus which can pass very easily in one species and you get it to hop from that one species to another species. Let's think, for example, from mosquitoes to humans. That might be very, very dangerous if you did that, but that's what they were doing. And the other thing is to actually add spike proteins to existing viruses. So that is to say, basically juicing up these viruses to make them far more deadly. So what you'd do, wouldn't you? You'd go to find something like, for example, a coronavirus, which is basically a common cold. It's a pretty innocuous thing. You know, you blow your nose for a couple of weeks and then it's over with. But it's incredibly contagious. And so the gain of function there is to add something which is much, much more dangerous to that very contagious virus. And I believe, Richie, that was what was going on over in that lab in Wuhan by the Americans. And I mean, although it's very difficult to be absolutely 100% sure, that to me fits the circumstances of what we're seeing here. Because the Americans were very quick to blame the Chinese, and yet they weren't very quick to admit that they had their own lab in the middle of the place in Wuhan where all this is supposed to have first started.
Yeah, it's very good work, that. And you got into that in great detail last year on the programme. It divided opinion, but a lot of people see it that way now, and I'm wide open to that possibility. Tony Gosling is on the programme this week.org.uk, The Politics Show. You'll find out all you need to know about it there. Fridays. It's a terrific programme. I'm not just saying that. It is a brilliant programme. What about the situation in the Netherlands? That's very interesting. Three nights of protest there. They've been called scum, these people, by various Dutch politicians. They say, listen, we're not going to put up with this anymore. It's destroying our lives. It's destroying liberty. We're going to keep doing it. It's sad to see businesses being looted and the violence. I don't like that. It doesn't do the cause any good. But at the same time, you and I have seen over the years how agent provocateurs go and do things to make people look, you know, to put people in a bad light. What do you make of what's happening in Holland?
Well, I'm not surprised, Richie, that the Dutch are angry. are really not. And the reason is because there is absolutely no excuse for a curfew. And this is the reason behind the protests. What is the problem with me taking a stroll up the street in the evening at, say, I don't know, 9 p.m.? There isn't a problem, especially when there's nobody else around.
Yeah.
And the idea that I'm criminalised for doing that, I mean, really what they're doing is they're imposing wartime conditions in peacetime. And so I would, if I was in Holland, I would almost certainly be out on the streets too, breaking that curfew. This is a real insult to the intelligence of the Dutch people. The Dutch are a very, very smart lot, as you know. And the idea that, somehow, through a controlled media where the opposite points of view are never put, that we've all got to be under a curfew for a virus which many doctors would say finished back last May and there's not really around anymore to any dangerous extent. Now, this is another side to all of this. We had a thing on the TV tonight with a funeral director saying, oh, we've had a massive increase in the number of funerals. Oh, I spoke last week directly to a funeral director who said, oh, well, it's just like normal this time of year in Bristol, that is. And so I just don't believe them. These stories, I think, are just lies. I really honestly think that we've got specific strategic lies along the lines of the sort of things that were used in the psychological warfare, which started the destruction of Colonel Gaddafi over in Libya. These are techniques which have been honed and practiced. They were used by our own deception planners and psychological warfare officers in the Second World War against Nazi Germany to, for example, trick them into where the D-Day landings were coming. And they're now being used against the domestic population. The reason is, I think, because, number one, as I said before, Brexit. But the other thing is that the West has been militarily blocked in Syria completely by the Russians. So there's no way that they're going to topple Assad. Their little dream of having the West controlling a puppet leader in Syria is never going to happen. And the same has happened also in Eastern Europe, in places like Belarus and Ukraine. The Russians are not having it. And so they have now thought, well, all of our military plans have been blocked by this amazing chess player who's the Russian foreign minister, Lavrov. You know, he really is the greatest chess player on the planet. And so they've decided, right, well, the only real we've got a soft target at home. That is our home opposition, the anti-war movement, for example, the anti-cuts movement, and a whole load of civil rights campaigners in our domestic populations. Let's have a go at them.
Brilliant. I've been asked and asked and asked and asked about face masks. This goes to conversation I had in the first hour of the programme with Edwina Curry and evidence about face masks and people talking about face masks. I know you've covered this extensively in your own programme. As far as I remember, and I've got one or two bits of information to hand from old Richie Allen radio programmes, a guy called Ben Killingly, who's a top guy at University College London Hospital. He's the consultant in acute medicine there and infectious diseases. He basically says that there's no real evidence, none that shows that face coverings reduce viral transmission in the community. None, he said. This is back in May of last year when they changed their minds abruptly, because previously they'd said that face coverings are not really helpful, but then they changed very quickly. Ben Killingly said in May last year, University College London, no evidence to suggest that they reduce transmission. And another guy went even further. A guy called, let me bring this up here now, a guy called Dr. Antonio Lazzarino, epidemiologist at University College in London, said this idea, he said they want to bring in masks because of some anecdotal evidence. There is no evidence, he said. The evidence we need needs to be randomised trials, controlled trials at population level. It would take a long, long, long time. Even after they brought in mask wearing, it seems that some very top minds said that masks are no good. This is topical. Forget Edwina Curry and all of that nonsense. People are still worried, and you know they're nervous. It's having a real negative impact on their lives having to put these masks on. What do you say about masks, Tony?
Well, all I say is I don't wear a mask, Richie. I just never wear a mask. And the only time, actually, no, I did, actually, when I was getting treated, when you were allowed to, by a chiropractor, because I've got loads of time and respect for my chiropractor, and I said to him, would you like me to wear a mask? I didn't say, do I have to? I said, would you like me to? He said, yes, please. So I did. But that's the only time. And I don't wear them at all. So I know that I don't have to wear them in the supermarkets. In fact, I was shared a fantastic letter. It's a 3-page letter, which you can show to anybody in the supermarket that says that you are allowed to go into that supermarket, do whatever you want without a mask on. And you know what? I rather love winking at other people who don't have masks on because we're in the know. We actually understand what's going on far better than the people with the masks. The masks, if you have a look at the videos, there are videos out there of people showing how the air comes in and out of a mask, particularly when you're breathing out. For example, if you get someone who's vaping and they breathe out through the mask, most of the air doesn't go through the mask. It comes out through the sides and it comes out through the bottom and it comes out through the top. You know, so you're not actually stopping anything spreading. You may be stopping a cough, for example, going across the room, assuming that you actually do have this legendary new variant of COVID. But it's to me, there is no need to. People should not do it. And if they feel they want to wear a mask, of course, do it. But the main effect of it is psychological. So what you're saying is, yes, I believe in this. And I think what we're getting is this kind of new, almost like a new religion. I know Neil Oliver talked about this on Talk Radio months ago, but that's what it is. Do you believe in this or not? And of course, the British are very, I mean, we tend to do what we think is the right thing to do. And we give them the benefit of the doubt, unless we know better otherwise. But they have made sure that none of the doctors who are saying the opposite, I even get on to YouTube. Now, I had a thing from Vernon Coleman, which was, I think it was when he first brought his book out, which is a fantastic book, I recommend to everybody, called The Proof That Masks Do More Harm Than Good. And it came out a couple of months ago before Christmas. And as soon as I put that interview up onto YouTube, literally within a day, it was pulled. But all Vernon is doing in that book is he's quoting official study after official study after official study, factual studies proving that masks do more harm than good. They're very bad, for particularly for elderly people, because they get hypoxia, which means they haven't given enough oxygen into their lungs, right, and into their body. So what you're doing basically by putting a mask on is showing, I think, that you're a fool. I know that might sound to some people extraordinary thing to say, but it's a foolish thing to do, to go along with those lies that say that a mask is actually going to make really any difference whatsoever, unless you actually are coughing and spreading. So
you've given two perspectives there. You've given two kind of conflicting perspectives there, but I totally understand why you've done that. You said on the one hand, you know, we like to do the right thing because most people are nice and they mightn't want to wear a mask, but they're nice and they think, well, I'll just do it. You know, maybe it'll help in some way. And then you said that by putting on a mask, you're a fool. I understand. I'm accepting that maybe this time those are not mutually exclusive things, but that's there's no doubt about that. And look, on the masks,
the vaccines, Richie, are a whole other thing. Oh, look, because they're really dangerous, game, yeah. These mRNA vaccines, the Pfizer and Moderna ones. I had somebody in a support group I go along to the other day saying that it's a kind of natural selection. If you're stupid, you'll have one of these experimental vaccines, you'll be a guinea pig, and it might not kill you straight away, but it may kill you. That there's a form of real sort of Darwinistic social Darwinism here, that anyone that's not got their head around this and maybe not, you know, been on the internet, had a good old look around and understand what's going on, may actually just be kind of collateral damage, may be a casualty. And the other aspect of this, which no one really talks about at all, is that there are loads of people out there called actuaries, right, that work on pension funds. These actuaries don't like paying pensions out to people who aren't contributing any useful work to society, that are just around in leisure. What they love doing is they love being able to invest in all sorts of things like vaccines rather than paying out people, elderly people. There is an enormous financial incentive actually for all these elderly people who are drawing their pensions to be gotten rid of. And so that needs to be, I think, stared in the face, absolutely square on. There is a financial incentive to get rid of people, to kill people if you want, to actually get people off the books. And nobody's looking at that. Absolutely nobody I've seen at all.
Well, I saw her name escapes me. Wait, no, it might not escape me. I might have made a note of it. Let me have a look. I saw a lady who is a bigwig in terms of administrating care homes. Well, she's an overseer of care homes. Her name escapes me. The lady is of Indian origin, I think. She spoke very eloquently to Simon McCoy on the BBC Today. And startling, well, pretty stark numbers coming from care homes in the last couple of days. Simon McCoy asked her, was it happening again? What happened last year were old people being basically left in desperate situations in care homes to die. And she didn't come out and flatly say yes, but she didn't say no either, Tony.
Well, that's a typical sort of guest you get on the BBC, yeah, isn't it? Someone, yeah, that doesn't actually want to tell you anything.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, that these people are basically covering their backsides. Then when they get on, they won't tell you anything. But one thing I can tell you, and I spoke to the Relatives and Residents Association reps the other day, is that the main driving force behind this is the insurance companies of the care homes. They, for example, say, well, you can have workers going in and out every day, no problem, and they may be working in two or three care homes, then going back home to their family, etc. But you're not allowed to have relatives in there. Now, this is an insurance and financial industry that's actually driving policy to do with whether or not you're allowed to touch your loved ones or not. Absolutely appalling. There was a brilliant documentary on ITV last week all about what's been going on in the care homes. It's appalling. This complete lack of contact between people is all driven by finance. It's all driven by the insurance business. And exactly the same thing was talked about by Dr. Simone Gold, that talk I'm sure you've seen as well, Richie, where she explains that she was called as a doctor. She wanted to give chloroquine to one of her patients in order to possibly save her life or his life. And she was phoned the next day by her hospital manager saying the insurance companies won't allow us to use these
cheap tablets. Yeah.
So this, again, it's the financial banksters. Why on earth do these people think that they know better than doctors what can be prescribed? I find it unbelievable. And the worst thing in many ways about all this is to see the second opinion that we always know is necessary to have around medical issues completely blocked by the BBC, ITV, Channel 4 News, and now YouTube too. Absolutely blocking those important second opinions. And doctors, like the guy I spoke to down in Guernsey, desperate to get treatments and cures for COVID out there and being blocked by numbskulls like Jeremy Greenstock at Sage from even being allowed to get the basis of a reply of a letter, yeah, saying, do you actually or do you not want to save 75% of your early stage COVID patients? You know, what exactly is your game? Or is it all just about vaccines? Of course, that is exactly what it's about. We want vaccines and we want vaccine passports. So unless you get permanently vaccinated every year, you're not allowed to travel. Now, this really is China, isn't it? This is an authoritarian system they're bringing in, Richie.
It is China, yeah. They tell you, frankly, they're pretty frank about it, they tell you that the mRNA vaccines will not stop you getting coronavirus, and we don't know if they will prevent you transmitting coronavirus, but if you get the vaccine and then you get coronavirus, the symptoms won't be so bad. That's monumental bollocks, Tony. That's the only way to describe that. Why should I take a vaccine like that? It won't stop me getting COVID. It won't stop me giving it to somebody, but at least you don't know that. And it might harm people. Now, let me say this. I don't want to do anybody any disservice, but one of the scientists who's been on this programme in the very, very recent past, in the last few weeks, right, has said to me today that he is alarmed at the amount of people dropping dead in Gibraltar. In Gibraltar, they are alarmed as hell. They are absolutely terrified at a huge increase in coronavirus deaths in the last few days. They just began to roll the vaccine out there 2 weeks ago. Now, there is no proof whatsoever that the vaccine has caused or has any relationship to the spike in deaths in Gibraltar. None. But my scientist friend, who is a real scientist, he said he wouldn't be surprised.
Well, exactly. I mean, we've seen in the past, I mean, with...
What's happened to T there? He's gone, is he? Are you there, T? Have we lost him? I think he's just dropped out. Oh, you're there. I just lost you for a moment. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
No, I've got two minutes left anyway. So 2 minutes, 2 minutes, and they're yours. So 2 minutes, okay. Off you go.
So these viruses, the vaccines, in the old days with Edward Jenner, et cetera, apparently it's an anniversary today in Gloucestershire, invented the vaccine using cowpox and smallpox. These things we've got today are, for two reasons, particularly worse. One is that they're given to infants and multiple vaccines. You're talking about five and six all at the same time that have never been tested together. So, of course, this is an enormous shock to a brand newborn baby. Personally, I think it's an absolute horror. I don't think kids should even be given any vaccines until they're, 12, 13 at school or something. Certainly not when they're just literally their first thing they do when they come into the world is get five different vaccines. I mean, this is just an appalling idea. But yes, the polio vaccines that Bill Gates was experimenting with actually spread polio. And in the documentary Cold Case Hammarskjöld, which we reviewed just before I was booted off the airwaves in Bristol, which was done by the Swedish national state broadcasters, that proved that they were injecting AIDS vaccines weren't AIDS vaccines at all in Africa. They actually had the AIDS virus. So they were injecting deliberately, this is white supremacists behind this, deliberately injecting the AIDS virus into black Africans in order to reduce the black population.
Do me a favour, mate.
An organisation called SAIMR, S-A-I-M-R.
And that information is there.
Maritime Research.
And it's there. And what you said about Gates and polio is spot on as well. Sorry about your other issues, mate, genuinely. And you know, if you ever need anything, give me a shout first. I am going to tell people.
Well, that's not very nice of you. I mean, I'm just hoping that by keeping on the case and giving them all the information that they want, and they seem to want endless amounts of information almost every other day, that they'll finally say, yes, okay, you can have your housing benefit restored.
Well, can I just say this? Can I just say this? Tony Gosling has never asked anybody for anything. Never, as long as I've known him, and I've known him since my days in Spain. Support good journalism, because there's very little of it left. If you go to thisweek.org.uk, on the menu bar, you'll see a link for donate. If you listen to Tony Gosling and you appreciate what he does, send him a few quid if you can, thisweek.org.uk.
Well, I'll tell you, I've actually got three books out now, which I brought out during the Halloween lockdown. The first one is possibly the most interesting, which is about the end game of the Second World War, something you and I have talked about quite a few times, but I finally got
20 seconds now. I've got to get out for 2 hours, because this has to be on a two-hour repeat cycle. 20 seconds,
okay,
go
on. Yeah, okay, so that's... and all those books are available to buy or just free download at bilderberg.org, www.bilderberg.org.
You're a legend, T. Thanks, buddy. Glad we got you in the end. Tony Gosling. That's the end of the programme. Thanks to Tony Gosling and thanks to Edwina Curry. See you tomorrow. Bye.